This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
Good teachers are hard to find, and a county school district in Florida has gone out of its way to make sure it kept one of theirs.
If I can't hear music, I can't teach it. And when he put me into those hearing aids, there was a significant difference in what I had been hearing and what I could hear now.
Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, we'll tell you the story of Steve Box, a music teacher on the Florida Panhandle who suffered a severe hearing loss and what that district did to help keep him in the classroom. We'll also spend an academic minute finding out why hearing new music can feel so darn good. I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. Steve Box found himself with a dilemma. For over a dozen years, Mr. Box has been the choral music and piano teacher at Shoal River Middle School in the town of Crestview. That's on the Florida Panhandle. And has been involved in music in Okaloosa County for over 30 years. One day, out of the blue, one of his best students came to him and said she had to leave his class.
And she was a very good student, had tried out for Allstate, done all the things that choral students do. And I said, wow, you know, what's going on? Did I do something? Is somebody bothering you? Is, you know, maybe a little bit of things going on in the class, you know, between the girls, guys, you know, just middle school things. She said, no, you're killing me with the music. I said, you don't like the music we're doing? She said, oh, I love the music. She said, you're playing way too loud. She said, I'm even have asked to move to the back row. And she said, it's hurting my ears. And I said, I have your ears checked for a ear infection or something. I said, there's got to be something wrong. She said, no. She said, the music's so loud. Everyone's telling me the same thing. Anyway, I didn't think. I kind of just brushed her off and said, okay, you know, well, do what you need to do. I really hate to lose you. You're a great asset to the class.
A few days after that, he was in the classroom alone, started playing music, and found he couldn't hear the music. So we went to turn it up.
And it was turned up to 100%. So I thought, well, something's wrong with the keyboard. It was an electronic keyboard. I had a man came in, he looked at the keyboard, and he said, Mr. Box, there's nothing wrong with the keyboard. So I said, okay, well, I've been having problems with it, and I just made excuses. Then one night I walked into the house just a few days later, and I was watching television, actually. My wife came in and said, why is the television so loud? She said, you've got to turn it down. I can't hear. And so I looked at it, and it was at 100% volume. So I turned it down, and a couple of weeks went by, and I couldn't hear television. I couldn't hear a lot of things because, again, she had not said anything to me about the volume creeping up and creeping up and creeping up. And so I said, well, I told her, I said, I think I'm having a problem with my ears.
So Box's wife made an appointment for him to see a hearing specialist, where Mr. Box found out he had an over 70% hearing loss.
They came out and they said, you're going to need hearing aids. So I asked what the price of the hearing aids were. I said, you know, that's great. I'll do the hearing aids if that's what I have to do. And they gave me the price of the hearing aids, and I didn't really have to worry about hearing. I almost had a heart attack at the price of the hearing aids at that time.
Unfortunately, the Boxes also found out that the county's health insurance did not cover hearing aids. It looked like he would have to take early retirement.
I said, well, but, you know, if I can't hear, I can't teach music. If I can't hear music, I can't teach it.
That's when Mrs. Box called the county office and spoke with the person in charge of health coverage.
And she said, if we can't get these, you know, he's going to have to retire. Go ahead and take an early retirement. And all he told her is, well, let me do some checking and I'll see what I can do.
What he did was he set up a road trip to Birmingham to see a second hearing specialist who confirmed the diagnosis and recommended hearing aids. That led to another appointment with another local audiologist who put Mr. Box in a set of hearing aids.
And it had actually gotten worse by that time, over about a month and a half period. And when he put me into those hearing aids, there was a significant difference in what I had been hearing and what I could hear now.
After that emotional surprise came a bigger one. The county decided to cover the cost of the hearing aids to retain Mr. Box.
The last 3 years, the county paid for the hearing aids. I don't know how they, you know, went about that. I don't know whether it was through their insurance. I don't know how it was. He just said, you've been here 30 years. We've got to help out.
Students in Mr. Box's class immediately noticed the change.
The first week of school that I used the hearing aids, the first set that I had, and again, I was using an electronic piano so I could walk around the classroom. I was setting the piano to where I could hear, and they were not doing very well, and they weren't keeping up with the music and not in tune and all the things that choral directors just have nightmares about. And one of them finally raised a hand and said, could you turn the music up a little bit? And so I realized then that the hearing aids were doing their job. And so it was a lot easier for me to turn down the hearing aids and be comfortable and turn the music up where they would. So a few weeks went by, and I let the students set the volume on the keyboard, and I just set my volume to where it was comfortable for me.
With something like this, there is no making it better, is there? It's just dealing with the situation.
Right, dealing with the situation. And the technology has gotten so much better just since my first set of hearing aids. The new ones that I have right now are twice as good or more than the ones I had before. There's so much more that I can hear now than I could just 3 weeks ago before I got these. And I thought I had the best that you could have at that time. And I probably did. But just in a couple of years, the technology has gotten so much better.
And I'll tell you, I'm looking you right in the face, and I have to really stare to even see that you're wearing hearing aids.
Right. Most people don't see them. And, you know, I'll just joke, you know, it's all you can do. You can't do anything else. And if I don't hear someone, I'll say, hey, my hearing aids aren't working today. Or, you know, let me turn where I can hear you better. And they'll say, you don't have hearing aids. And then they'll see that I actually do.
Now, you're getting an award from Beltone. Of course, Beltone, a world-famous hearing aid manufacturer. How did Beltone find you?
About a year after I got the first set of hearing aids, I was actually leading music in a church in Crestview, and a man came up to me and said, hey, my buddy wants to do an interview with you from the Crestview News Bulletin. And I said, what about? And he said, well, he'd heard about your hearing, and the county helps you out, and that your hearing's much better, and he just wants to do a local story because you teach here in Crestview. So I said, sure, no problem. He came out and asked me a few questions. I let it go. It went on to Crestview News Bulletin website, went out in their little paper that they do for the Crestview area, and never thought a thing about it. Apparently, Beltone was starting a new program, a new hearing aid program, and they got a company called ZWO out of South Carolina, I believe it was, to do their advertising. And the lady that I've been in contact with was in Destin, from what I understand, having a vacation with her family, and she was just searching the internet for different things. So she put in teachers and firefighters and nurses and different people that had problems with their hearing, and my name came up as a teacher in the local area. So she read the article. She went online, read some more information, apparently did a little research on me and how long I'd been at the school. And they called me the first time. Whenever they called me or actually emailed me, I thought it was a scam. And so I just kind of brushed it off again. After she contacted me a couple of times, I thought, well, you know, I can figure this out. I went online, checked out the company, realized it was an ad company, and realized they were doing an ad for Beltone. So I went ahead and called her. It went from there. That was about 6 or 8 months ago.
Well, obviously, the county saw the importance of keeping not only an experienced teacher, but keeping music education in the school. Do you see that happening still? Is music education still important in districts, as far as you know?
There's many districts that it's still important. We're still losing choral programs and band programs, not in our area, but in areas down in the south part of the state. All around the United States, we're still losing music ed programs. I don't know what the solution to that is. It's all money.
What are the benefits to it?
The benefits of music education, in the time that I've been in it, I see kids. The biggest thing I see is their self-esteem. They have a lot better self-esteem when they sing, and they have the camaraderie with the students around them, whether it be in band or chorus. In our school, the band and chorus do a whole lot of things together, so there's camaraderie between each. There's not really a competition between each. But I've seen, again, in the last 30 years, test scores go up because of being in music. If you read the data, students that read music are more fluent readers. Their reading scores are higher. A lot of times their math scores are higher. Their reading comprehension scores are higher. So I don't have the research in front of me, but just what I've seen in the last 30 years, I've had students that started out maybe not so good in the sixth grade, but when they got to the eighth grade, their test scores were so much better. And I think it's directly because they stayed in the music program whether it be band or chorus, for those 3 years, and a lot of really good English and math and science teachers.
Still to come, Mr. Box gets his award as a Beltone Safe and Sound Hero. Plus, we learn more about hearing issues and technology. That's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Well, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to The Best of Our Knowledge's podcast or download the WAMC radio app to listen on demand anytime, anyplace. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Today we're telling you the story of Steve Box. He's a music teacher at a middle school in Crestview, Florida, up on the Panhandle, who was facing the possibility of leaving his job because of a severe hearing loss. In the end, the county paid for Mr. Box to receive hearing aids, and he continues in his position. That's where Beltone, the hearing aid company, comes in. They've started a new program called the Beltone Safe and Sound Hero Award to honor people who make a difference to their community while suffering hearing loss. On August 2nd, Mr. Box was presented that award in a small ceremony at the Beltone location in Pensacola, Florida. He was given the award by Howard Hancock, a board-certified hearing specialist and the owner of several Beltone hearing aid locations along the Gulf Coast.
Hey, we heard you were thinking about retiring and that this is going to allow you to continue on, and we're just glad to be able to present this award to you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for all you do.
As he accepted the award, Mr. Box was surrounded by his family, some colleagues, and of course, representatives from Beltone Hearing Aids. I spoke to Mercedes Reinhardt, a marketing representative from Beltone, about the Safe and Sound Hero program.
When we started this initiative, we were just looking for heroes across the country. And we use heroes just in terms of people that work in the service of helping others and that have either experienced hearing loss and are now, you know, looking for ways to fix it and do something about it. And so we have reached out to people across the country, anywhere from police officers to teachers to nurses.
And while this program honors heroes, hearing loss is a universal problem. About 20% of Americans suffer some form of hearing loss. That's over 48 million people in all walks of life. But only one in four of them will actually take steps to solve the problem. Luann Henson is a hearing aid specialist in the Pensacola office.
Oftentimes they come in, they don't think they have hearing loss. They think it's everybody else that's talking to them. So through the process of testing their hearing, showing them the difficulties that they're having hearing speech when people aren't looking at them, we're able to help them understand what their needs are and also how making a change will impact not only them, but their entire family.
Technology that's in a hearing aid is so much more advanced than it was years ago. Years ago, it was simply an amplifier. We turned it up, and we turned it down, or the patient turned it up, turned it down. Today, the technology in them is so advanced that we're able to identify frequencies where the patient has difficulties and hearing loss and reach out and pinpoint those frequencies for the patient. Also, the hearing aids are smart technology. They're able to tell the difference between speech and just regular noise. They can turn noise down, turn speech up for the patient.
And the miniaturization is something. I know when I talked to Steve the other day, you have to stare.
Oh, absolutely. Years ago, everything had to be large, and today we put two computer chips now in these small hearing aids and Bluetooth, and they're still so much smaller than what we used 10 years ago.
It really, truly has picked up. And with our latest hearing aid, the Trust, people are finding that they're doing 50 and 60% better in a noisy environment than they've ever been able to. Patients who have been wearing hearing aids for 20 and 30 years, when we put these on them and we put the noise in the area so they can hear the difference, they're amazed at the difference. Hearing in noise is one of the most difficult aspects of hearing loss, I believe, because it's hard to differentiate. You go out to eat, you smile and nod a lot because you hear what's going on around you, but you don't hear across the table. The hearing aids today now are making a huge difference. the technologies available, the different accessories that can be used now, to actually put that person's voice right in their ear, it's making a huge impact on their quality of life. If you ignore it, it is not going to get better. It is only going to keep proceeding to the point where the ability to understand can truly be lost. So get your hearing tested. Even if you're normal, it's good to have a baseline on file somewhere, something that can be monitored through the years. You go for your physicals for everything else. You get your eyes checked. You go in for your medical physicals. Add hearing to that list and take care of it and protect what you have so that we're able to keep you enjoying your life.
Just adding to what she said, the hearing loss can reach a level, and maybe it doesn't get any worse, but because you don't hear certain sounds over a period of time, your brain loses the ability to interpret those sounds by wearing the hearing aid and stimulating the brain for those particular frequencies, those sounds. You're able to continue to understand those sounds, and you don't lose that ability to understand. And so many people don't recognize that.
Both Howard Hancock and Lou Ann Henson say the reactions they get from some patients when they first slip on that new set of hearing aids can be very rewarding.
A lot of it depends on how long they've gone, what they've been missing. I've had patients who couldn't go to job interviews because they couldn't hear. And they sit down and cry because they can now hear and maybe improve their situation because now they can go to work. I've had grandparents who have not heard their grandchildren, and the grandchildren walk around thinking that grandma and grandpa is mad at them because they're not answering them. They're not talking to them. And that grandchild's here in the room, and they say something, and they're both happy because now they can talk. Oh, you weren't mad at me. You didn't hear me. Now I understand. I have seen everything from tears of joy to the wife just sitting there going, you know, with her mouth open because he can hear her from in the hallway. It makes a huge difference. I mean, as an adult, I don't think it's any different. If they're missing what they want to hear and they can now hear it, they're overjoyed. Are they perfect? No. But if we can help somebody hear the things that matter to them, and that's what it's all about, is helping somebody hear the things that matter to them. If you can do that, there's usually a sense of being a little overwhelmed sometimes and definitely very, very happy. And it makes a huge improvement for them.
I can tell a story of a mother and her daughter that came into this office a number of years ago. Mother lived with the daughter. Every week after church, they all met at this particular daughter's house, and they had a family dinner. The mother, over time, had taken to going into her bedroom and reading after lunch was over because she could not hear. They came in together. We fit the mother with a set of hearing aids. After a few weeks of wearing them, they were back in on a follow-up, and the daughter's telling me about how mom is now sitting out in the den with all of the family, communicating with her children, her grandchildren, and the conversation continues to go in this direction of how much it has meant to the mother. So the mother is sitting over here, and she's beginning to cry. Then the daughter begins to cry. I begin to cry, and my wife sticks her head in. He says, "What is all this crying going on about?" But that is the typical thing that we see in the industry, and it's so rewarding because of it.
Meanwhile, back in Okaloosa County, Steve Box is getting ready for another school year. Like the past 3 years, he will be wearing hearing aids paid for by the county.
The audiologist said that music teachers, choral directors as well as band directors, probably band directors more so than choral directors, will have a hearing loss because of sitting behind a piano or sitting with the instruments for 6 hours a day. And I didn't know it myself, but behind a piano, when you're playing the piano, it's about 105 to 110 decibels at any given time, right up into the person that's playing the piano. It's not that way behind the piano, but where the soundboard is coming up at you. And I did that for 20 years before I actually got an electronic piano where I could adjust the volume, and it's not so loud on me. Of course, it was loud on the kids, apparently. So,
finally, how many years do you think this hearing aid is tacked onto your career?
The ones I have on now, probably 2 to 3 years. And we were talking about that, myself and the Tina from ZWO, and she said the same thing you just asked, said, how long do you think these are going to help you? And I said, the way they're working right now, 2 to 3 years. And she said, and you don't know it yet, but Beltone has also made another product that will probably add 2 or 3 years to that. It's exciting to see the things that they're doing to make people's lives better for the hearing.
So you're not going to hang up the keyboard anytime soon?
No, I've got a son in college, so I've got to wait for him to get out of college, and that'll be at least 2 more years, 3 years at the most.
And as for the Beltone Safe and Sound Heroes program, that's just beginning. Again, here's Mercedes Reinhardt.
You deserve to hear the sounds that matter to you, and that's really what inspired this whole thing, and that's why we're going to keep it going. It's so powerful listening to Steve's story, and, you know, there's emotion behind it because that's what life is about, is hearing the sounds that you love.
And at least one teacher and a few classes filled with students like the way that sounds.
Hear that music, that good old country song. It makes you walk, makes you talk, or makes you jump on the floor. Then you got to come back for more.
Making sure Mr. Box could keep his job was important, but of course there are many other reasons to be thankful for enhancing our hearing. One of them, listening to new music that makes you feel really, really good. That's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
Welcome to the Academic Minute. I'm Lynn Pascarella. Discovering and enjoying new music is now easier than ever, and there's nothing like being the first one you know to come across the next big song. Valerie Salimpour, postdoctoral fellow at the University of Toronto, explains how the structure of a new song can strike a chord with the brain's reward center.
In every single culture, as far back as history has been recorded, people have enjoyed music. It somehow remained an important source of pleasure for humans, despite any clear survival value. Why is music so pleasurable? In one study, we found that when people listen to intensely emotional music, they actually release dopamine in deep subcortical circuits that are phylogenetically ancient and have evolved to reinforce highly adaptive behaviors, like eating and sex. Interestingly, people not only release dopamine at the peak pleasure moments in music, but also in anticipation of these moments. This makes sense when we think about the important role that anticipation plays in music appreciation. Music is really just a sequence of sounds organized into patterns over time. The temporal unfolding of sounds leads to the creation of expectancies, and their violation, confirmation, or delay of resolution can lead to emotional arousal. But what if you're not familiar with the music? What are you anticipating? In a recent study, we created a mock iTunes environment inside the scanner where people listened to previously unheard music that was recommended for them, with a chance to purchase the music with their own money. We found that liking new music activates parts of the brain that are involved in forming expectations and coding their accuracy, in combination with areas involved in pattern recognition and high-level structuring of information, and areas involved in storing templates of all the music that they've heard in the past. These templates are different for each individual and shaped by styles and genres that they've listened to in the past. This helps explain why different people have different tastes in music. These findings suggest that music is an intellectual reward based on the integration of some of the most advanced and highly evolved parts of our brain involved in complex pattern recognition with deep subcortical pleasure centers that we share with many other animals.
That was Valerie Salimpour of the University of Toronto. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors on our website, academicminute.org.
The Academic Minute is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio, in partnership with the Association of American Colleges and Universities. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to WAMC.org and click on the programs link. While you're there, subscribe to our podcast or any of the other WAMC or National Productions podcasts. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@WAMC.org, and you can find us on Twitter at TBOOKnowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at WAMC.org.